Today, the science of property investing with Evan Thornley. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today, I'm joined by Evan Thornley from Longview. Hello.
Martin, how are you?
Yeah, very good. Great to have you on the show. And thanks very much for sparing a bit of time. We're going to have an interesting conversation this afternoon, which will, I guess, centre around property investment, those sorts of things. But just before we start, introduce yourself and also a little bit about Longview.
Sure. Well, I guess me personally first. So, Martin, I'm a recovering tech entrepreneur. Okay. I'm a recovering lawyer for that matter. But yeah, so my background, I put the first tech unicorn together, the first Australian company listed on NASDAQ many years ago. And I think it peaked at about $14 billion in market cap, which was real money in those days.
When money was money, right?
Yeah, exactly. And retired and came home to Australia. And then I spent a good period of the next decade on a very foolish mission, which was trying to fix the Australian Labor Party. That wasn't successful, as you can tell. So I went back to my first, my first love, which was being a tech entrepreneur. But then, as most people do, you create wealth in some form and then you look to preserve that wealth in a thoughtful way. And that led me to being a residential property investor. And I was just shocked at how poorly property investors were treated by the real estate industry. I guess I was used to my professional services providers bringing a level of professionalism and ethics and sophistication to, their service to their clients. If I go to, my lawyers or accountants or others, and I just didn't find that in residential property. And, if I want legal advice, I go to a good lawyer. If I want tax advice, I go to a good accountant. If I want advice on residential property investing, who do I go to? We just didn't see it. So my business partner and I, Anthony Cohen and I, Anthony was, top brass at KPMG for 28 years, co-founded the corporate finance practice and the energy practice and was on the national board and a whole bunch of things. Anthony and I were equally frustrated by this. And so we decided that we would, if you can't beat them, join them. So we set up Longview. Property's a long game. We called it Longview, with a view to helping property investors be more successful. And so we started out just trying to deal with the important operational challenges of property management, which we were surprised at how poorly that was done. And we tried to understand why. And it became clear that it was done poorly because 95% of property management businesses were owned by real estate sales agents who didn't care about property management. And largely didn't care about property investors, which was surprising to us. So we started out in that. We're now one of the biggest property managers in the country. We now manage 4,300 properties. So that's grown quite quickly over the last 5 years. We've just opened in Queensland. We're big in Melbourne. Our client net promoter score numbers are about 60 points ahead of the industry benchmark. Now, to be fair, the industry benchmark is -6. Okay, so that's not a great NPS. Our last was +62. So, that's a pretty solid number. So, we think we are delivering for our clients. Our tenants' NPS score is actually pretty strong. I'd like to tell you how much ahead of the industry benchmark that is, but nobody else seems to measure tenant satisfaction. So I know we're at +30. We aspire to be better. I would think the industry benchmark would be -50 if anybody bothered measuring it, but they don't. So we've been in property management for the last 5 years and grown that business quickly, and that's going really well. But then we started analysing the investment performance of our clients' properties. And to my shock, although not total surprise, they were about 280 basis points below the property market average per annum. And so I'm like, the business was smaller then, but I'm like, okay, so these nice folks are paying me $6 million a year to manage their properties. I think we're doing that really well. That self-same group of customers is losing $60 million in lost capital growth because they bought the wrong assets. So we really have to help people buy well, because ultimately in property, the most important decision is buying the right asset. And, you know, the difference between buying the right asset and the wrong asset typically is $500,000 over the next 10 years. So now we're becoming quite a large player in the buyer's advisory part of the real estate industry. And we do that by combining, we're bringing more and more of the sort of, you know, the very experienced buyer's advisors in the industry who bought thousands of homes over decades, have a lot of experience, but we're matching them with our data science team, which to my knowledge is the only data science team in the real estate agency industry. And we're doing a huge amount of work on, you know, trying to get predictive validity on capital growth at the individual property level. So with a combination of experience and data, we think we help our clients buy really well. And so that business is also growing very quickly. I hope and believe we'll be the biggest buyer's advisor in the country in the next year or two. And now we're starting to look at, if we can buy well at scale and manage well at scale, then we probably should start helping people deploy capital at scale. And so we're starting to develop a funds management capability where we're looking to create some real estate investment trusts in the residential space. There's plenty of them, as you know, in just about every bracket of commercial property, but none in residential to speak of, which is shocking to me. So that's a little bit about Longview. As you can see, we try and take the long view. We try and marry field expertise with data, and we try and be on the side of our clients through everything that we do.
Well, very interesting. And as you may know, you've been following a few of my programs, and we say exactly the same. You've got to buy the right property, right? And a lot of people are buying the wrong property, whether it's an occupier or particularly an investment property.
Yes.
And we also do a lot of analysis on the yields. So we look at cash flow in, cash flow out, as well as the capital appreciation. And more than half of property investors are actually underwater, even now, even with all of the changes to what's gone on, right? So that's not a story that mainstream wants to cover, because they always want to paint property investment as this U-Butte cert, you know, no, whatever you buy, it's always going to go up. You're always going to make massive returns.
Yeah, there's this, everyone thinks, when I talk to clients who've got a poorly performing property, particularly one that's got, you know, had no positive price growth, they often say to me, yeah, you know, I'm surprised. I thought the market would have gone up by now, but it hasn't. And, you know, it's a very unfortunate conversation, because I have to say, actually, the market has, but your property hasn't. And then, you know, then we start into a conversation about, you know, something you deeply understand, but everyone seems to forget it. Land appreciates, buildings depreciate. If you bought a new apartment off the plan, there's not a snowball's chance in hell that's going to make you any money, just for starters. So, and there's a whole industry full of people who are there to convince you otherwise. But, you know, we've studied the price history of every property in Melbourne for the last 40 years, and every single property that's ever sold for less than it was bought for, and a vastly disproportionate number of them fit a certain set of criteria, and new build apartments is right at the top of that list.
Right. And it's interesting, of course, because quite often it's the inexperienced investor who gets hooked into buying these off the plan or new build high rise.
Yeah.
And as I keep saying to people, you know, up in North Ryde, for example, here in Sydney, high rise apartments are down 26% from where they were 2 years ago, right? 2018, 2019, before the last crash. In other words, there's been no capital growth at all.
Well, negative capital growth, right?
Exactly.
Now, you know, to be fair, and it's not often that I'm fair to new build apartments as an asset class, to be honest, but to be fair, you know, the COVID impact on population, particularly overseas students, and somewhere like North Ryde to be an example, has been a particular unique characteristic that's made it worse. But it's still a dreadful asset class with or without that unique circumstance the last couple of years. And there's been no one there to guide people. In fact, quite the contrary. There's a whole lot of people who claim to be on the side of the buyer who are taking effectively secret commissions from developers. It's really, really, it's heartbreaking. You know, we've got 4,500 clients. I talk to these clients all the time, and I see many. These are hardworking mums and dads that play by the rules, put some money aside, seek to invest in something they understand in property, because they usually don't feel comfortable, for example, in the equities markets. and they get sold a bill of goods by unscrupulous operators. And, we're the ones who often have to tell them the truth, which is, unfortunately, you bought the wrong property.
Mm. And one of the other observations I've got there, Evan, is that I've spoken to a number of people who've bought not just one high-rise apartment, but two, three, or four in the same block, right?
Yeah.
So no diversification at all, just, right?
Exactly. You know, no diversity, not much liquidity, poor underlying asset performance, really just the worst of the worst. And it's heartbreaking. You know, these are hardworking people who deserve a better outcome. And there's plenty of better outcomes available in this asset class, but they just need to be assisted to buy the right assets.
Right. So in terms of, you know, better outcomes, obviously there's type of property, you know, low rise or houses rather than high rise, but also geographic spread as well. And my analysis suggests that you've got to look at all of those things, different geographies, different types of property, different price points in the market. And your title of your firm is so critical, right? Long view, right? You've got to be taking, what, at least a 5, probably 10-year view?
Really, yeah. I mean, anything much less than sort of 7 to 10 years. I mean, just the transaction costs alone, as you know, stamp duty and other things. And you know, the long-term upward trend in residential property or residential land, at least, let's be clear, is unalterable. But it has fits and starts. And so you can't be confident that you'll participate in that long-term trend with a horizon of less than 6 or 7 years. As you would know, Martin, if you look at the long-term averages over those periods, it's unlikely that you won't participate if you've got the right asset once you get past 6 or 7 years at almost any time in the cycle. But there's obviously, what we call vintage risk. There are certain years that, you know, really won't be the best years to enter the market. And it's important, obviously, to have a perspective on that.
And the other question I've got is, to what extent do your clients tend to be portfolio investors, in other words, multiple properties, or is it, you know, the mum and dad with a, you know, one property investment to opportunity? Because I see quite a few people who've got one or two who are making really, really bad decisions.
Yeah.
I also see people with portfolios.
Which is why they've only got one or two, right?
Yeah, well, that's probably
the folks
right,
who... You know, folks who bought well and who are getting, you know, at least, you know, who should be getting roughly a doubling of value every 10 years, so roughly 7% compound annual growth rate, can then leverage off that and buy another property and then leverage off that and buy two more. And, you know, over the course of 3 decades, they should build a decent-sized portfolio. But if, unfortunately, they've been in the wrong assets and they're not getting that level of growth, and particularly if they're not getting that level of growth, but they've still got the leverage and the costs of the leverage, then they're going nowhere or backwards. And then, of course, they're never going to have more than one. So, look, our clients are the full spectrum. We're kind of a random sample of the when I look at our stats and I look at the national stats, we were roughly a random sample. So, what is it? 71% of property investors only own one property. But, of course, you've got to do the reverse math. 51% of all properties are owned by a multi-owner, because you know the 29% who own more than one own often more than two, and so about half of all of our properties that we manage and are owned by people who have two or more investment properties, usually in addition to a family home. So there's small portfolios. We have a small number of wealthier families who, you know, really have intergenerational wealth and put a good portion of that into residential property as an asset class amongst the rest of their portfolio.
So one of the questions I've got is when people are thinking about finding a property, obviously you go through the geographic and property type, then the price question comes to mind, right? And I think we've seen a lot of people buy at the wrong price. So you can buy a good asset, but it's still at the wrong price, and that means that it's more difficult to make that return there. So do you also, you know, parse out some of the price dynamics as well as the,
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a funny thing being a buyer's advisor. You spend most of your time talking clients out of buying a property, right? Either because it's fundamentally not a good enough asset and that they can get better, or it is a good asset, but really at the price that it's trading, it's overinflated. And so, you know, we spend a lot of our time talking our clients out of buying properties they've fallen in love with. But almost without fail, they ultimately end up buying a better asset at a more appropriate price, and they thank us for it. And so by the end of the assignment, they see the real value that there is in working with professionals who have both experience and you know, really strong data and analytics capability.
Because, of course, it's a complex process, and I'm amazed how some people seem to spend longer, you know, frankly, researching the price of a microwave oven on the internet, right?
Yeah.
Compared when I'm going to buy an investment property and the agent says it's great, and, you know, and then they don't go and do the due diligence.
They don't think about some
of the other important stuff, and off you go.
The number one issue is still buying the right asset.
Yeah.
If, you know, heaven forbid you pay perhaps 5% too much for that asset, that's not ideal. But, you know, if it's going to grow on average about 7% per annum, you'll get that back relatively quickly. And after 10 years, the difference won't be particularly material to your overall returns. But, you know, nobody should be paying more than they need to. And there's enough assets out there that you don't need to get, particularly as an investment, to fall in love with one and pay more than you need to. There will be others that you can get at fair market value. So, but the most important thing is always that you buy. And, you know, there are ways of playing residential real estate as a principally yield-driven asset class. But broadly speaking, it's mainly a capital growth asset class, and it's a levered equity returns play, right?
Absolutely.
Because the downside risks are surprisingly minimal. It's an incredibly safe asset class to lever. And that's where the wealth has been created over the last 100 years, is by people getting levered equity returns over the medium term. So that's, you know, we think that's the principal play. It's not that there aren't ways of making, you know, strong cash flow investments in the space if you wish to. There's a range of regional markets or other particular property types if you're looking to get cash flow. But generally speaking, you know, commercial property, generally speaking, is more of a yield-driven asset class, and residential, generally speaking, is more of a capital growth-driven asset class. And because of its relative lack of volatility, it's a relatively safe asset class to get levered capital returns. And that's when you start, you know, outperforming equities.
Mm. And interestingly, of course, if you look over 100 years or so of trend, right, for most of those 100 years, prices on average have risen by about 3% per annum, right? But over the last 30 years, it's been accelerated away. So it's a lot stronger. So I
pick you up on that, Martin. I think you're talking about
I've got a chart.
No. And I know your chart, and it's a real numbers chart, not a nominal numbers chart. Okay.
Yep.
Now, if you were buying unlevered, that would be the right way of analyzing the problem.
Yep.
Right, because it's the purchasing power of those dollars.
Yep.
But if you're buying levered, and your debt is denominated in nominal dollars, then actually inflation is your friend. So while the real return is only 3%, the nominal returns were much stronger than that.
Yes.
And so those folks who had 80% debt in there actually made very strong returns, despite the fact that the real return was more modest. So I think it depends on your capital structure as to whether you should be thinking principally about real or nominal dollars.
Right. And the point I was trying to get to was, right, you've got to be careful about how you look at these things, right? Because
absolutely,
there are a bunch of different lenses that are important. The point I was going on to
couldn't
make was
more.
we had a very significant acceleration of values when interest rates dropped, right? When effectively the banks were able to lend a lot more relative to what they've been doing previously, and then we had the deregulation of the financial system before that. So there's a bunch of reasons why the dynamics of the property sector has changed significantly. But from a leverage point of view, you got to take all that into account when you actually work out what the right formulation is and to find the right property with the right structure to be able to support it.
Well, look, totally agree. And, you know, I guess we spend a lot of time looking both at the micro level at the individual property, because as I say to my clients, you don't buy a suburb, you buy a property. And I can show you good and bad properties in every suburb. So this hot suburb myth that a lot of the spruikers and developers and real estate agents go on with is a nonsense. Yes, on average, well-located land in certain suburbs at certain points of time will appreciate somewhat more greater than others, and we've done a lot of work on that too. But you've got to look at the individual property level. But at the cycle level, which you were discussing earlier, interest rates is an important factor. Population growth is an incredibly important factor, which is generally underestimated.
Yep.
And inflation is an incredibly important factor. And so you know, the asset class in total is only levered 22% right now. Nearly half the entire value in the asset class has no leverage on it whatsoever.
Yep.
So there are certain segments of the market which are highly levered segments, typically the first home buyer type segments, which are very interest rate sensitive. And there are other segments of the market which are not very interest rate sensitive. So as you say, you've got to do your homework on these things. And I guess that's what we try and bring to our clients is, you know, a degree of rigor. I'm an old McKinsey guy. You know, you've got to really continue to test your theory against empirical reality. You know, there was a long period of time, for example, through the 50s and 60s, where interest rate rises kept happening, and actually property prices grew faster in that period than when interest rates were dropping from the early 90s through to the 2000s, when price growth was actually less. So there's a lot of complexity in that, in those cycle economics, and you know, we try and work our way through that in a thoughtful way.
Absolutely. And you know, I keep saying to people, this is an area where you've got to spend the time to think about it, and don't just jump in, right? Don't just assume. It's really, really important to do the work. And I know people don't want to hear that, but yeah, it's important to do,
to do the work. Well, you know, and or to get professional advice any other field. And I think that's, I guess, part of where we're coming from. You know, I wouldn't pretend to know the tax code better than my tax accountant. They've got years of training. They have access to, you know, practice development materials and a whole bunch of other things. And, you know, it's not wise for me to do my own tax accounting any more than it's wise to do my own brain surgery. There's a reason that people who get professional advice in residential property, as in any other field, are on average hopefully going to do better than folks, unless they are very skilled and have a lot of time, would be able to do on their own.
Absolutely. Now, let me turn the conversation on a bit then, because quite a few people have bought the wrong property. Right. Yeah. So they've got this investment property that's not performing. You know, they might not even have the yield that they expected. There might be vacancies. There might be structural issues, all those things that are bubbling around. The interesting question then is, what's the right strategy? Because I've had a lot of people say, well, if I hang on long enough, you know, things will turn right.
The market will catch up for me. And in most cases, unfortunately, the market's well and truly gone past them, and it's not catching up, and it's not going to. So that's a conversation, you know, we increasingly have with some of our clients who, as I say, it's heartbreaking to see this, that have really gotten the wrong asset. And look, Martin, the conversation we like to have is what we call changing trains, okay? You're on a slow train right now, and you're watching all these fast trains rocket past you. There's good news and bad news. The good news is you can get on a fast train. The bad news is you're going to have to stop this train, get off at the station, buy a new ticket and get on a fast train. And that will cost you time and money.
Yep.
And in the short term, it's going to hurt and it's going to feel painful. But 3, 4, 5, let alone 10 years from now, when you're on that fast train, you'll have made that money back that you lost. You know, you've got to kind of take your medicine. And that's a hard conversation to have with people. But, you know, more and more of our clients are accepting that. And as we're longer into the process and we can actually give them the references of folks that did that now a couple of years ago, particularly given the recent capital growth, you know, it's the right answer. It's not a happy answer initially, but actually, you know, once you take your medicine, it is. Now, unfortunately, there are some clients who got in very highly levered, where if they try and take their medicine now, they may really just evaporate all of their equity. And so those folks really are stuck. And that's what makes me the most angry when I see that they've been put in that. Yeah, and they were almost without exception deliberately put into that position by people who made a lot of money at their expense in the developer and sales communities. And that makes me angry. It's unfair.
Yeah, I agree. And I see it all the time as well in terms of the work that I do, that people have been, I would say, duped or tricked into going into a property deal that was always going to be problematic. Yeah. You know, if everything had happened perfectly, maybe they'd have, you know, been able to just keep their head above water, but life isn't like that.
Right. But and you know, Martin, you'd know all this. You see this all the time. But it's not that the spruiking necessarily is completely fact-free, okay? They'll concentrate on, for example, the amount of depreciation benefits you can get, right? Okay, and that's true. That's real. There is a depreciation benefit, or, you know, it's changed now, but you buy off the plan, you don't pay stamp duty. those things are genuine benefits. They are worth a material amount of money. They're just worth about 10 times less money than good capital growth. So people get tricked into what's a big number and what's a small number, and focusing on elements that actually are the small numbers and miss out on the big numbers. Or God forbid, as often happens, they actually pay, as to your point earlier, an inflated price and actually have negative capital growth when the property's put out to the real market afterwards.
Absolutely. And we certainly know that there's some of that going on at the moment, particularly now with the sort of the increased supply of property coming on, yes, with banks being a little bit more cautious about some of the lending,
yes,
as well.
Yes,
so
exactly.
You are seeing, you know, some fragmented changes, particularly in the
Good gracious, all the folks that bought properties less than 40 square metres and then suddenly found out that there was no one to finance their next buyer.
Yeah.
And, you know, those student apartments and things dropped in by value, you know, by half.
Yeah. Well, I was talking to one of my clients the other day, clients in the sense that we have a general conversation about what's going on in the industry, and he bought four student apartments, right, at the peak of the market, right, just before COVID.
Yeah, right.
They're all vacant.
Yeah. Right?
And basically, he can't get out because no one is prepared to buy the place.
And no bank will finance them to get out.
Correct.
And usually the promoters have got some, I need to be careful with my language, but some interest, shall we say, in the owner's corp management and other parts of the value stream. Mm. And so they're draining out huge volumes of cash on an ongoing basis as well.
Absolutely. And that's the other thing, of course. You've got to think about the ongoing cash flows. I always say to people, have you done the cash flow? You know, have you thought through what this is going to look like once you bought the place? You know, and remember that strata fees and those things can go up, right? Yeah. Are you clear about what happens, you know, what processes are in there in the background? Because, again, if you think about holding on to that capital appreciation as the way to make money, you've still got to service the flows in the meantime.
You've got holding costs, right, unless you're in a very strong yield. And if you're in a very strong yield, you're probably not looking much capital growth. So you've got to choose.
Now let me come back then to the other part of the conversation, because you talked earlier on about property management, right? And I do think there is a direct line of sight between buying the right property and the property management processes post the buying of the property, right? I see many people who end up essentially, even if they bought the right property, with it not performing and it not being managed effectively, which means that they don't actually get the value in any case, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the first material risk and cost is vacancy. And you know, a lot of folks, they've bought an investment property with a mortgage. They're pretty cash flow sensitive. And while the property's let, they may be comfortable with the cash flows. When the tenant leaves, they may be looking, depending on how effective their agent is, at, you know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks of vacancy, plus the letting costs plus the advertising, and suddenly they've got a $3,000-$5,000 hole in the ground, which they really hadn't provisioned for, and that can really hurt. You know, I've seen plenty of clients who, you know, well, that's the Christmas holiday gone because suddenly a tenant left just when we weren't ready. There's a $5,000 hole in the ground. You know, so that's part of what we have done is, and this is very different to something that sounds the same, but is different, that developers do, but we've created a guaranteed rent service for our clients, where we get rid of the vacancy hole for them and just give them a steady stream of cash flow every month, no matter what. And then the vacancy risk is ours, not theirs. And obviously, you know, we're professionals. We should be able to manage that vacancy risk well. We do. We actually have measurably beaten every other agency in Melbourne in terms of days on market for our vacant properties because of a combination of our data science and the experience of our team. But, you know, we're better placed to take the risk of vacancy than our client is in many cases. And that's why we created the guaranteed rent service, so that for folks for whom that was a real risk, we could iron out the vacancy. We take that risk for them and they can be certain about their cash flows.
Mm. And I think that's really important because, again, I have to say I see a lot of people assume that the gross yield is easily achievable, right?
Yes, and that it's going to be constant.
Correct.
And they don't understand the cash flow implications, particularly of vacancy. Yep. You know, vacancy is the biggest cost in the day-to-day operations of most investment properties, but most people don't think of it as a cost until it's suddenly there and there's a big hole in their cash flows. Mm. It's I liken vacancy to toothaches. You know, if I said to you, I can prevent you ever having another toothache, you go, yeah, look, I haven't had one for a long time. Don't worry about it. It's fine. When you've got one, you're like, hey, who's going to fix this toothache? So it's always surprised me that more of our clients haven't taken up the guaranteed rent service. I mean, we've got hundreds who have, and let me tell you, we went into COVID, not a single one of those clients lost one dime in vacancy costs or in price reductions, while the rest of the market got its head handed to it. So they kissed us on both cheeks. But it's still hard for people to see something until it happens, to know about toothaches until they've actually got one, and then it's too late.
Absolutely. Well, we're coming to the end of our conversation, but two last questions. Firstly, prices have been very strong in many areas over the last few months, obviously artificial thanks to very low interest rates and government stimulus. Signs possibly of prices beginning to, level out a little. What's your perspective over the next few months as to where property is going from a price perspective?
Yeah, look, Sydney's about 10 percentage points above its long-term trend line. Melbourne and Brisbane are roughly on their long-term trend lines. So I think we need to differentiate, as you were saying before, different markets are in slightly different places. Melbourne, for example, has been hit harder by the population decline associated principally with overseas students. So I think that, I think Sydney is closer to the top of its cycle. Our general sense is that, the population growth holiday that we've had is going to temper the market quite a bit. We'd expect the market to taper off, possibly decline slightly. I think we think it's more likely than not going to decline, but to taper off for the next 6 to 9 months. But then you're going to have population returning as the borders get fully open. And, in a city like Melbourne, there'll be 400,000 more people. So that's going to put upward pressure on prices. What the regulatory response is, however, as we know, that we've started the macroprudential tightening. If I was a betting person, I'd say, I think generally those markets will be sort of modestly inclining or flat for the next 6 to 9 months. There will be a spurt driven by the increase in population through the borders opening, and there will be a macroprudential response that will probably taper things off and potentially lead to, again, some degree of correction. You don't have huge corrections in residential property, but, it could go up another 10% and then over the next year or two go down, between 5 and 12% and then return to its long-term path. That wouldn't be surprising. It'll depend mainly on the macroprudential tightening. So that's our best guess. When the bank economists were out there saying that, prices are going to go down 10 to 30% during COVID, we put a note out to our clients saying that that is complete nonsense. We think prices will be roughly flat or slightly declining for a period and then will spurt out after that. I'm happy to say that memo reads pretty well these days, and the bank economists have got egg on their faces. So that is past performance is no guarantee of future performance. I can't guarantee you that what I've just said will be the way it plays out, but I guess that's our best guess right now. We're certainly less inclined to deploy capital in Sydney than we are in Melbourne or Brisbane at this point in the cycle.
From a geographic perspective, do you cover the whole of Australia or is it mostly Melbourne-centric? Or what's your focus?
Look, we started in Melbourne, Martin. We're only a five-year-old business. We've just opened up now in Brisbane. We certainly hope to be across the eastern seaboard in the next sort of 12 to 18 months. We service 146 suburbs in Melbourne. We're just starting to open up in Brisbane. We'll be putting a lot of our expansion effort into Brisbane this coming year, and then I'd expect we'll probably start moving into Sydney the year after that. That was our plan anyway, as I say. As it turns out, our view of the market is that's probably happens to be a sensible allocation anyway, but to be honest, that was our plan regardless, so yeah.
Okay, and if people want to find out more about your services, where do they go?
Yep, to longview.com.au. You'll see... Normally, when you go to a real estate agent's page, you see pictures of beautiful houses and men in sharp suits. When you go to longview.com.au, you'll see our logo, which is a group of interlocking hands, because that's what we're really about, which is delivering teamwork with our clients to get them a good result over the long haul. So we're fairly radically different, I guess. Our focus is buying well, not selling well. And then managing well. If we buy well and manage well, our clients will do fine. And generally speaking, if you ever want to sell the property, the property sells itself. And the agent mainly gets paid for getting your signature on a page. So we're not focused on selling.
Well, I really appreciate your time today. I think there were some really, really important messages for prospective property investors and property investors already in the market, right? Because the points you make, I think, are so, so critical. And I just keep underscoring about doing the work, making sure you buy the right property, making sure you think it through. Don't get sucked into all the spiel and spin, yeah. Right? And, you know, some people accuse me of being a property bear, which I'm not. I'm just saying it makes such a difference on whether you buy the right property or not, which is you're preaching my gospel.
100%. So it's a privilege, Martin, to, I mean, you've built a wonderful franchise of thoughtful viewers, and it's a privilege to join your coalition of the sensible. We are relatively new players here, but we are aspiring contributors to the coalition of the sensible. We just think property investors are entitled to the same level of professional service that most of us have come to expect in other quarters of our lives.
Well, I appreciate your time today. Thanks very much. And we'll have to pick up the conversation down the track.
Terrific. Really, thank you for the opportunity, Martin. It's a privilege to be with you. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Bye.